because the plagues were going to be bad. And anybody who would stay there had potential being carried away in the flood. And we don't know how many were probably killed during the time when the Medes and the Persians came in, but you know some were. There were some living in that city. You recall in the scriptures that Daniel was way up on top. And of course, he's in the room when the day comes that Belshazzar is in there. He's partying. He's drinking out of the vessels that were meant for the Lord's house. And the Medes are hitting at the door, but they think he can't get us. And God says, you're going down tonight. Well, Daniel didn't die that night, but there were probably some people in the city that got killed because they were standing around and they're in the wrong spot at the wrong time. All part of the consequence of sin. But not long after that, what happened? Cyrus makes a decree that anybody who wants to go back can go back to their homeland. And only a handful said, okay, I'll go. And it wasn't with any joy. It was just, well, probably should. We got to be careful about our probably shoulds. We got to be careful that we're not just probably should about God. Obedience glorifies God. In a word, salvation, Christianity, being a believer, being spiritual, in a word, is being obedient. That's what being spiritual is. And these people were told to flee. Flee out of the midst of Babylon, deliver every man his soul, be not cut off in her iniquity, which means there must have been a possibility for that to happen. For this is the time of the Lord's vengeance. So this is the time of the Lord's vengeance. There, it also says where he's going to, in that same verse, in verse 6, he will render unto her a recompense. There's going to be payment for their sins. Look what it says in verse 7. Babylon hath been a golden cup in the Lord's hand. And what he's saying is that he's referencing the fact that God had used her. Israel, or rather Babylon, became God's battle axe. In fact, he uses that word of her down in the passage in a little while. We will come upon it in a minute. But she's been a golden cup. And the golden cup was that which God made the nations to drink. And so in verse 7 he says, and that God hath made the earth drunken. The nations have drunk of her wine, and therefore the nations are mad. What he's saying is he's saying God has used her to take the cup of wrath. You know, in the New Testament where it says in Revelation that she had made the whole earth drunk with the wine of the wrath of her fornication? Well, that's what God is saying is because Babylon was such a prominent feature in the last days, as she is all around us. We don't recognize it because we're so comfortable with it. But the fact is everybody wants to be part and parcel of the tolerant and the accommodating world in which we live. That's pagan and that's papal and that's all evil. I mean, it's commercial where we have all the goodies, and it's also religious where everybody says, let's just go along to get along. And everybody's given up. Now what he's saying here is he's saying that God has used Babylon in the old days. He used her as a cup of wrath, and he would take her, Babylon, into a nation that was sinning against his people in one way or another, as we've seen delineated in other places. And he's saying, you're going to drink. Edom, you're going to drink. And Israel, or rather Babylon, would come in and wipe out that nation. He'd go into Edom, he'd say, you're going to drink. He'd go into Ammon, he'd say, you're going to drink. He'd go to the Philistines, you're going to drink. The Egyptians, you're going to drink. He says, I'm bringing wrath upon these people, and I'm using Babylon as my battle axe. He says, they've been made to be mad. Three different translations are found from the literal translation. You have a word that means that they were not just to be mad, but they were to be shaken. Might be the New King James that says that. Boast is one of them. And one is translated not made mad, but made to boast. One is made to be shaken. The idea here is, I believe what we're seeing is he's saying they're all going to be happy she's falling. So I think the boasting might have some merit. The other is the idea of madness and shaken. Yeah, kind of the idea they're going to sing a song that this big bad thing has fallen. But perhaps also we could say, no, it's perhaps when they said Babylon has fallen, and they howled in the ships on the sea, that they're going to be made to lament. Now, think about it this way. Ammon, Moab, Philistines, Egypt, they all see Babylon fall. But they've been there for so many years now, decades. The old generation's passed off, new generation's here. Only a handful of people remember how it used to be. So all of the young bucks, what are they saying? What are we going to do now? What will we do now? And that's what the world's going to do when this world system crumbles and falls apart. They're going to say, we loved it. It was all we knew. And you know, you ever seen those situations? I think you have. Where some woman is beaten by her husband and she keeps going back to him. Why do you keep going back to him? Yeah, they think that's so stupid. Why do you keep going back? He'd beaten you up. And the reason they go back is because it's all they know. And when people lament Babylon, they're going to do that because it's all they knew. People don't like change. And the nations see Babylon fall, even though she was a golden cup, and the concept of being golden cup, like the golden head in the image of Daniel that Nebuchadnezzar dreamed about. He said the golden head is the kingdom. It's one of the glorious and most glorious of all kingdoms. It's the way it is today. Everybody's looking. They got their clickers. They've got their controllers. They got everything. And say it's all we ever knew. And many people are going to have a hard time for the transition, but nevertheless, God is going to bring it. Verse 9 says, we would have healed Babylon, but she is not healed. Forsake her and let us go every one to his own country, for her judgment reacheth unto heaven and is lifted up even to the skies. Remember, the gate of God is what Babylon means in one of those local areas there. Gate of God. They are saying that her sins, yeah, she got up to the gate all right. And when she got there, God said, hello, and brought her down. Let's all just go back to our homes. And they're not happy. We would have healed Babylon. Guys, this is what's going to happen in our world. Everybody's just kind of chomping at the bit to, you know, bring us into a new world order. Trying to bring us into a one world scenario so everybody's the same. And you know what's going to happen? They're going to get what they want. They're going to get it. Be careful what you ask for. You just might get it. I'll tell you, I talk to people all the time, and what's scary is it's usually seniors, much senior. Oh, they're just taking our stuff away. Really? I think when you were a kid, your dad probably told you, go get a job, but not anymore. Take care of me. I deserve this. This is mine. It's my right. And there's anger that kind of seethes through the eyes and through the teeth as they're gnashed. Well, they're not going to like it, but they're going to go to their own countries. And the Bible says in verse 10, it says, the Lord hath brought forth our righteousness. Come and let us declare in Zion the work of the Lord our God. Now, interesting. The first verse in verse 9 is about what the nations are saying. The next one, verse 10, is what the Israelites are saying as Babylon falls. They're saying, let's go declare the great works of God in Zion. They're going home. Pretty neat. They're going home. And we're going to declare. And what did God do? He showed our righteousness. What righteousness could they possibly have had? They were Israelites. They had such idolatry that even the Babylonians, when they carried them away, said, you're carried away today because you're sinning against your God. We know all about it. It's infamous. Your infamy is known everywhere. What righteousness? The only righteousness they had left was one wherein they said, even though it was weak, weak-kneed and had little grist behind it, we believe in Jehovah. Their confession. It's all they had. And you know, there's times when you get to the end of yourself and you feel like you don't have a right to say anything. Just shoot me. I got nothing. But you know what? I know God's got. Never let go of your confession. Never let go of your profession. When something goes wrong in those moments of sliding in the ditches, we say, Lord, thank you. Because God just wants us to kind of interact with that truth. But if the world was coming against us, as we said, it was kind of a little bit of a thought that just kind of dawned on me on Sunday. You know, if they're going to say Christmas can't be tolerated, how far will it be before they say Christians can't be tolerated? We're coming down to that potential. This world doesn't know what to do with Christians because Christians are the only ones who have a solid standard that can't be budging. They can't deal with people who won't budge. Verse 11 says, make bright arrows, gather the shields. The Lord hath raised up the spirit of the kings of the Medes. This is how God is going to fan them and winnow them. He's going to bring the Medes and the Persians. This was the following after Babylon. And there was Assyria, there was Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, then the Medes and Persians. He's brought up the Medes and he says, for his device is against Babylon to destroy it because it is the vengeance of the Lord, the vengeance of his temple. Now, when you say vengeance, you got to understand when God avenges, he avenges blood. And when they worshiped Molech, and when they worshiped Baal, and when they worshiped Ashtaroth, Man, these were all things that had so much bloodshed associated with them. Asherah was a fertility goddess, and in that particular realm of the world, the more people involved themselves with that, the more it impacted everybody that watched the behavior. Molech, they took babies and gave the babies. They'd take Asherah, they'd conceive children they didn't mean to have. They'd take them and give them up into fire. It was a circle. The baby's crying. He's in your arms. But it's not my husband's baby. What do I do with him? You know, probably Molech would probably like to see him down at his place. So Molech's this big, I think it's a calf or something like that, a cow-headed god with arms stretched out like a man. And they'd throw the babies right on the fire and kill the babies. Screams. In fact, the Valley of Hinnom was the Valley of Crying, because it was there they would do it, and there was this crying going on all the time as babies were screaming at the top of their lungs, and they would hit the drums. It was the Valley of the Drums, because they would make the drums go louder and louder so nobody would hear it. That was Israel. And God says, no, I can't see that anymore. He says, no, I've got to do vengeance because this stuff all creeped in. Babylon was the heart of it, because all those things were, she's the mother of harlots, and all those things were spawned by Babylonian viewpoints and ideology. And as a result, God says, it's the day of the vengeance of God. He's going to wipe her out. You know, when he wiped out Babylon, she never has been rebuilt. It was Saddam Hussein who said, I'm going to rebuild it. I'm going to restore the glory of Babylon in Iraq. Because that's where Babylon was. And he started building bricks with little imprimaturs of Nebuchadnezzar's image and Saddam Hussein's image. Well, you saw how that worked out. Not happening, because God is in control and he says they're going to be wiped out. But spiritual Babylon will come into its own one day. Verse 12 says, set up the standard upon the walls of Babel. Make the watch strong. Set up the men or watchmen. Prepare the ambushes, for the Lord had both devised and done that which he spake against the inhabitants of Babylon. So don't lose sight of what he's doing. In verse 13, O thou that dwellest upon men and waters abundant in treasures, thine end is come, and the measure of thy covetousness. Put in your margin by that verse, Colossians chapter 3 and verse 5. For it is in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 5 that the Bible tells us that covetousness is idolatry. Why do people want false gods? Because they don't want the true one. They want a god that they can create and dictate the doctrine of. They want a god according to their own imagination. Because if God is just a Santa Claus, then I can live any way I like. If God is just a golden calf, like at the foot of Mount Sinai, when the people made a golden calf and said, Hear, O Israel, is your God Jehovah, while Moses is up getting the Ten Commandments. If he's just a goat or if he's just a cow, we can just throw him a bale of hay and go have our carousing, which they were doing. And it was out of control. And he broke those commandments written by the finger of God and ground them to powder and made the people drink it. It's like washing their mouths out with soap. He says, you guys have completely lost perspective. You've been coveting. You've been coveting. You've been envying the Egyptians for decades. And now you get a moment of freedom, and what happens? You start living just like them. You make a golden calf, and you start carousing, and you get involved in immoral parties, and it's out of control. And God slew thousands of them that day. It's like a kid getting out of his house for the first time. Mom and dad aren't there anymore. They go to college. What happens? All the rules are gone. It's drink and puke, drink and puke, drink and puke. And they think it's funny. It's jump from bed to bed to bed. And by the time you find yourself somebody to marry, they're not pure. They think it's foolish, or they think it's weird to be pure. That's Babylonian behavior. It's completely Babylonian. It's idolatry, it's covetousness, it's envy, it's lust, it's unbridled behavior. And it all comes out of a Babylonian viewpoint. And even as Egypt had its foolishness that the Israelites envied, that was Babylonian. It all traces back to Babylon. Verses 14 and following, we move from the fall of Babylon proper to the folly of Babylon. What was the problem? Well, they missed God. Look at verse 14. The Lord of hosts had sworn by himself, saying, Surely I will fill thee with men as with caterpillars, and they shall lift up a shout against thee. Meaning he's going to bring an army. He says in verse 15, He hath made the earth by His power. He, God, hath established the world by His wisdom. And He, God, hath stretched out the heavens by His understanding. When He uttereth His voice, there is a multitude of waters in heaven, and He causeth vapors to ascend in the ends of the earth. He maketh lightnings with rain, and He bringeth forth the wind out of His treasures. God is saying, I am God, and there is no other. And the folly of Babylon, because Babylon traces all the way back to Nimrod, the folly of Babylon was they missed God. Do you know what the Medes and the Persians are going to do? They're going to come in and wipe out Babylon, and one of the first things Cyrus is going to do is in Ezra chapter 1, in verses 1 and 2, where he says, The God of the earth has ordained me to be king, and He has charged me to build His house. That's pretty cool. Because even though he was a pagan king, he read what Isaiah had said over 100 years before he came into his own. Called him by name, and he called him my anointed Cyrus. And when Cyrus was told who this God was, he says, truly, he is God. Babylon had Nebuchadnezzar who said, there's none like me. God says, your wisdom is going from you today. You think you're somebody? And for 7 years, he rooted around like a wild beast till he came to his senses and got converted, which is pretty cool. I think we're going to see Nebuchadnezzar in heaven. It wasn't Nebuchadnezzar that made Israel or Babylon fall. It was the impact of Nebuchadnezzar on Belshazzar, who actually came into his own and acted like a pagan after his dad. A lot like Manasseh's son. Even though Manasseh got converted at the end, his son came after him, and he was just as wicked as ever. You see, the sins of the fathers impact the children.